Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is Aaron O'Brien.
What up, what up? We're back into Discovery territory.
We haven't left it.
No, we haven't left it. We are one more episode away for finishing up the season. This is episode The War Without the War Within. Dave, non-spoilers, what did you think about this episode?
Unfortunately, the name of the title is too literal for what they're planning inside the episode. I said last week that I felt like this episode was going to be filler, and this episode pretty much was filler to me. Like, nothing really happened. They're just kind of like, make plans, and the plans weren't where I thought they would be going. They're even crazier than what I was thinking. What about you, Aaron?
Yeah, these plans at the very end really shocked me. But yeah, there's the plans are interesting, to say the least. I don't know if I call it filler. I think I would call it kind of like reassessing where everything, all the chips fell or all the pieces fell when we just shaked everything out onto the floor after we left the Mirror Universe. So, you know, we had to figure out where all these characters are and where there's, you know, how they feel towards each other and how we're going to regroup and figure out the next plan of attack.
Yeah, but it just there's two episodes left. Like, you know, before tonight's episode, there's two episodes left to resolve the Klingon War. We found out that like, you know, like a whole bunch of Federation outposts has been taken over. They've lost a third of their ships, and it's just like, how are they going to resolve this in two episodes? And nothing this episode really is getting them there. So they just have to deus ex machina it out next episode. And I just, and the plan, which I won't reveal yet because we're not in spoilers, just doesn't make any sense how they're going to wrap this up in one episode, unless that next episode's 2 hours long. Or unless they lied to us and season two is still going to be about the Klingon War, because I just don't understand how they can wrap this up in 45 minutes. I just can't see it.
I see a different way, but when we get into full spoilers, I have maybe a different thought of how it might end. But we'll see how that goes. We do have – you said there's a little bit of something you want to talk about Brian Fuller.
Yeah. News came out from Inverse, and they were talking about how the Mirror Universe was actually always part of the plan. They originally wanted to go sooner than they did, and you know, I feel like it almost kind of would have been better for them to go sooner, so they could have gotten back sooner, so that this ending wouldn't feel so rushed.
Right.
Because I feel like this ending's gonna feel really, really rushed.
And okay.
I just don't know how that's gonna work out. I mean, it's interesting that was, you know, a plan from the beginning. That's something that they were thinking about, or that Fuller was thinking about, and that they kept it, but they obviously changed it. And I think Fuller didn't intend for Lorca to be originally Mirror Lorca. That was something that the other showrunners and writers decided later on.
Did they say that in the article?
I think so. I didn't read the whole thing just now.
Okay.
I read an article earlier, and I think that's what I remember. I was just rereading parts of it before the show. I didn't see that when I was rereading it, but I want to say I read that somewhere else on Facebook like a week ago. We just hadn't talked about it before.
I do wonder if Brian Fuller was in, you know, if he didn't move over to American Gods full time, and he wasn't, you know, if he was more hands on through the whole process, other than just the beginning stages, I wonder if the show would have taken a completely different turn.
I'm sure it would have taken a different turn, but of all the things that he mandated that they kept was bald Klingons. I'm like, really? That's why? I'm like, if you're going to do all these other changes, why? It was probably because they'd already done, like, all the original art, and it started making prosthetics, so they probably didn't have money and or time to change it, but...
No time for wigs.
No time for wigs.
Yeah.
Or facial hair. Or however
that works. Or facial hair. Whatever.
either way, it's just like, I don't know.
Right.
I'm not sure if I would have liked it better or worse if Brian Fuller had done it, but I think if they would have gotten to the Mirror Universe sooner, them getting out sooner would be better for resolution to the war. Because if they really are ending it next episode and season two has nothing to do with the war, like the writers have said, I just don't see how it's going to work.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
I think a lot of my problem with the show is not the show itself. Like, people say I've been down on the show, that we've been negative on the podcast. And it's just, I feel like the writers have set up false expectations, and that's what's driving me crazy, since I know they've said the war is not going to be in season two, and they've said, you know, the season's about the war, but the season's mostly about Lorca and the Mirror Universe, and now they're getting back to the war. I feel like I wish they would either tell the truth and be vague or just not tell us anything at all.
Yeah, I agree. I think these whole things where they give you hints and then the hints aren't really true or they're half-truths, then you kind of feel lied to and you're just like, come on, guys. So it's just if you don't feel comfortable telling us what's going to happen.
Just don't tell us.
Just don't tell us.
I would be completely fine just being surprised. Going along, but if you're going to give us hints about what it's going to be about and that it's not true, I mean, it builds up false expectations and false things in your head, especially for people who podcast. You know, we're always trying to be speculative and trying to figure out where it's going because that's, you know, kind of half the fun, going on what they say based on what we're seeing.
Yeah.
And then when they don't match up, it's like, what's going on?
Yeah, yeah. No, it makes sense. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to feel about that. I mean, it's, again, I just feel like these writers and the producers and even, you know, the networks or movie, you know, producers always lie to us and tell us things, you know, just to placate us, to get us our butts in the seats to watch it. And then they go like, oh, I guess we didn't tell you everything, you know.
Or we told you lies about everything almost.
Or partial truths. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, should we get into this?
Let's do it.
All right, full spoilers. If you have not seen episode 14, The War Without, The War Within of Star Trek Discovery, please turn off this podcast now. If you don't care and you just want to hear about it anyways,
keep listening.
And if you have listened, I mean, have watched the show, please enjoy with us. And we'd love to hear what you think about this, too, after we've got this whole thing wrapped up here.
Yeah, message us on the Facebook group.
Yeah, let us know, exactly. So here we go, The War Without, The War Within, Season 1, Episode 14. This aired February 4th, 2018. We start off, Saru is down the transporter room and is startled to see Giorgio in the transporter room. And Giorgio seems equally shocked to see a Kelpian as a captain.
I love that. This is probably my favorite part of the episode.
Well, we did say when, you know, this was happening. So,
there's been all these memes about it. How about the food chain?
Yeah.
Vok eats Giorgio. Giorgio eats Kelpians. It's great.
Yeah. So Giorgio makes the comment, you know, like, you know, just yesterday we were eating on the entrails of your brethren. And True is shocked. And you can sort of see Michael Berman his head down in shame. And so he's like, okay, Giorgio, you're confined to quarters. And Saru even tells the transporter operator, it's like, this is completely classified. And you will be, you know, I don't know what he said, but
treason. You'll be, you know, it'll be considered treason if you mention this or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty severe.
Yeah. Pretty severe. Saru, Berman kind of apologizes to Saru on the trip out of the transporter room. He's like, look, I thought I'd spare you this.
But to be fair to Michael, she said she hadn't seen any of them before she ate them.
But she did, because the Saru
She's seen Saru, but I mean, that's, you know, all she could, you know, it could have happened later, you know.
I mean, anything's possible, but sure. No, I mean,
we as the audience know, but I mean, like, the transmission happened before they ate them.
Oh yeah, yeah, but he did, but I think I think Saru did ask her, have you seen the Kelpians? And she says, no, I haven't. And she just boldly faced lied. But, I mean, it's one thing to lie to say your whole, race is enslaved by the Terran Empire. But the other thing to say is that I ate a Kelpian last night and I dined on the Gangula. So
it was good, too.
It was good. All that butter. So Berman is asked to go to the sick bay because apparently Ash Tyler has is somewhat up and about and he is recovering, and he wants Michael to see Tyler to see, like, maybe this will make him feel better a little bit and bring out more of the good side of the Vok Ash Tyler or whatever we're seeing with Ash Tyler. And Michael asks, is this an order? And Saru goes, no, it's not. And he goes, well, then I'm just not going to go.
And she
walks away. Really strange. I thought that was very strange. Now, of course, Ash Tyler, killed Dr. Culber. Ash Tyler attempted
to kill her.
Yeah, attacked Michael. I mean, the guy definitely.
Like it was strange that she didn't want to have anything to do with him.
I don't know. I just think I'd have too many questions on this whole thing. I want to resolve. I mean, maybe not yet, but I would just be like, hey, you're doing all right. Okay, I don't want to talk about it now, but we're gonna catch up later on. But she was like, nope.
Yeah, I don't know. It made sense to me. I don't know if I'd want to talk to somebody who just nearly killed me. And this also makes me upset that, it looks like they did indeed dead end the Ash Vok thing.
I don't know. He says he's got Vok's memories all in his head.
Yeah, but there's no way. Like, I think it'd be way too convoluted for them to, bring Vok back. Full Vok next episode.
Or does Ash Tyler use his inside knowledge of his Klingon world to do something help with this last part of the Klingon War?
Yeah, that's true, I guess. But
the whole
Vok thing just didn't work out.
What did you want him to do?
I just thought it'd be fun to see them, him and Laurel trying to take over the ship, and then because that was the plan. Obviously, that was the plan, and they didn't even get close to it.
Well, they're all on the ship. I mean, anything's possible. So Saru goes to sickbay alone and visits Ash Tyler, and he doesn't have any outward signs of being Klingon. Tyler tells Saru that he can access Vok's memories, but they're separate, and it's like he can see somebody else's life inside his head. And so Tyler explains that the Vok was a test case for reassignment surgery, and Tyler remembers that Vok and Laurel planned to take Discovery to inspire the followers to return to Kuvma's cause. He's happy to hear that Burnham is okay, and he remembers attacking Burnham, and he remembers murdering Dr. Culber. And he says, I deserve to be put in the brig. You can't leave me out. And Saru blames Vok for what he did. And he basically says that, Tyler will monitor you, puts a little bracelet on him, and says, you have restricted
access. Too bad it wasn't an ankle bracelet.
I know. But he says, but you have restricted access to the ship, but, you will not.
Apple Watch he gets. It's pretty nice.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. So from there, Saru heads back to the bridge, and then there's another ship in range, another Federation ship in range to Discovery. And all of a sudden, Discovery, before they even have time to act, is boarded by a group of Federation races. We've got Andorian, Tellarites, and Human.
Andorian and Tellarite from the Mirror Universe.
Right, and we get Sarek as well. And then we get Admiral Cornwell. She beams over as well. And Sarek mind melds with Saru to confirm his identity. And he confirms that Lorca is indeed dead.
Well, I just thought it was bizarre that they're pointing guns specifically at Saru. Why are you pointing guns at Saru? Why aren't you pointing guns at anybody else?
I assume they were pointing at everybody. I mean, even when Michael Burnham comes to, talk to Admiral Cornwell, she points the gun phaser right at Michael and says, stand down.
Yeah.
Don't even talk to me.
That was a bizarre scene.
Yes, it was. I thought it was strange
they're not Klingon. I mean, like,
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't understand. Like, I mean, if they, in the mirror universe, this would make complete sense.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, obviously these people are all on edge, and for good reason. So then we continue with Cornwell. Basically, they're in like a conference room, ready room, and she basically is pretty upset that the Mirror Lorca was indeed the Lorca that they had known, but there's no way anybody could have known that was from the Terran Empire.
She vaporizes his fortune cookies.
Yeah, she does do that. It's kind of funny.
I wish she would have done that to his triple, since they're not going to use the triple as a smoking gun anymore.
Right. We do get information that the Terran Discovery was destroyed by the Klingons when it arrived into the Prime universe.
I'm so sad by that. I wish Captain Killdee would have gone on a rampage. Maybe that would have helped them, you know, win the war with the Klingons.
It would have been interesting.
That would have been so much fun if that Discovery was still going. And like, yeah, we're not really Terran Empire, but we're killing Klingons.
Just kicking ass and taking numbers.
Sure, yeah. I mean, why? Like, they just got destroyed as soon as like they got here. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Lame.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of weird.
I expected way more from Captain Kelly.
That's true. That's a good point. So now that the USS Discovery is back into Prime timeline, they've started to disseminate the invisibility shield description codes that they discovered way back, whatever it was.
Episode 9,
yeah, which seems like a century ago.
It does, because you have to break right after. So, yeah, it feels like a really long time.
And then they make bring them Discovery crew up to speed that the third of the Starfleet has been destroyed. And it doesn't have and it seems like the Klingons have divided into all 24 separate houses, all competing for conquest. So they're not united anymore. And they're basically fighting within each other.
Seeing who can carve up the biggest piece of the Federation.
Exactly. So what Cornwell wants is Discovery to take a spore drive jump to Starbase 1. And then all the records from their trip to the Mirror Universe will be destroyed. And it's basically saying it's too tempting to anyone who had anyone lost, you know, their wives, husbands, loved ones, children, that to know that if they could go to the Mirror Universe, maybe they could see the dead again. So
I mean, that's a nice little nod to the fact that they didn't really realize there was a Mirror Universe in TOS, which is kind of nice.
Right.
So it's like they try to stick to canon in some places, and the rest of this episode doesn't really stick to canon.
In a lot of ways,
I just don't understand how they could have lost, like, this many people die, lose this many, you know, a 30-year fleet, and that not be referenced anywhere 10 years later. Because that, I mean,
that's
not that long ago.
Right. So, but then Stamets basically tells Admiral Cornwell that all the spores were used for their final jump, and they'll have to just warp to Starbase 1. And apparently Starbase 1 is that short jump to Starbase 1 is riddled with Klingon ships, and they're even worried that they won't even make it to Starbase 1.
Didn't they say it was like a light year away?
They said one AU, one astronomical unit, which I don't know what that constitutes in Star Trek. You know,
one AU is the difference between the Earth and the Sun.
Right,
I think they said it was 300 AUs from Earth and one light year away from their current position. But one light year shouldn't take any time to get to a warp 5.
I would assume.
But like, they spent a long time going that one light year.
Right.
Because we have that scene with Ash in the food bay, and we see Tilly and Demure, and then all of a sudden we see Demure later, and they're still traveling because she's back at her station. I'm like, that's a really long one light year. Were they going at like a warp 0.2?
I don't know. I wish I could tell you. But next we get Burnham basically says there's one other catch here, and she brings Cornwell and Sarek to Emperor Giorgio. Giorgio wants to go back to her own original universe. And basically they're saying, we don't even know how to get you there. Even if we could get you there, we can't. You know, there's no possible way. Byrne wants to give Emperor Giorgio a political asylum. But until then, she's going to be a guest on Discovery. And then when she arrives at Starbase 1, she'll be basically housed there until they just figure out what to do with her. But Cornwall basically says, until now, we're busy fighting this war. We can't really be bothered with you right now.
we don't have time to think about you.
I thought it was weird. They just kept on going, like, you know, the resemblance is remarkable. I'm like,
it is the same person.
It's the same
different universe. It's not like they're like different people who just look alike. They're not like body doubles.
I didn't understand why they kept saying that. It seems strange. Maybe if they said it once, it'd be strange. But Sarek and Cornwell both said that.
Yeah.
Next thing we have is Tyler runs into Paul Stamets in the hallway, and this does not go well. Tyler tries, apologize to Stamets to what happened to Culber.
And Stamets like stronger neck muscles.
Yeah. Should have been working out those neck muscles. What were you doing? Stamets basically says, asking, do you feel terrible what happened? And, you know, Tyler says, yeah, I do feel terrible. He says, well, you might be human after all, and just walks off. So probably went better for Tyler than he knows. So
probably,
you know, I mean, most people would probably just try to kill Ash Tyler for what he did right there. So
that's not the Federation way, though.
No, it's not.
And Stamets is very much a pacifist.
Is he? Did he ever say that?
Oh, I mean, he didn't like that. He's always said he didn't like that his thing was being used for war. He said it was supposed to be scientific advancement, not war. So I always got the feeling that he was a pacifist, and how Lorca guilt-tripped him into figuring out how to make it work quicker with the Korvan II thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, it just feels like he's like more of like a pacifist. He doesn't want to do war. It's just how he struck me. I mean, I don't think they ever said Stamets is a pacifist, but
give me more like an Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer didn't really approve of the, you know, making the atomic bomb, but, you know, he understood that there were reasons to do it. So,
oh yeah, but he was doing this before the war started.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Well, so was Oppenheimer in a lot of ways.
Well,
he wasn't building the bomb, but he was studying, you know,
nuclear fission.
Yeah, exactly. Next we get is Tyler goes to the mess hall and gets all the evil stares, and he sits alone, but Tilly feels bad for him and joins him, and soon everyone else joins him. Like, yeah, that Dr. Culber.
Yeah, he wasn't a good doctor anyway.
He wasn't that great.
He obviously didn't read your records, you know. Yeah. He just let the computer give you an okay, and just he thought it was good.
I really kind of like, not that I didn't, I know Tilly's heart's in the right place, but part of me was like, well, he did kind of murder somebody, and he might kind of be like
somebody else.
And he might kind of be like a Frankenstein monster type of thing going on there. So
he's exactly a Frankenstein monster.
Like, do you really want, I mean, he's worse than a Frankenstein monster. At least the Frankenstein monster in, you know, Shelley's original book was
still human. Wasn't,
yeah, he wasn't really evil. He just was treated like a monster. He's kind of evil deep down. So we just don't know how deep it goes. So I don't know. Anyways, whatever.
Yeah.
but of course, you know, Tilly's like, yeah, maybe he's still good.
You can talk if you want to, or just eat.
Go just eat. Go do whatever you want to do. Okay.
No reference to that green spore yet.
No, not at all. Kind of weird, too. So next we get Discovery comes into range of Starbase 1, and Saru's Gangula jumps out of his neck as usual. And once they come out of warp, they find that the Klingons have taken over the Starbase 1, and it's just a bunch of wreckage, and there's a big sign of one of the ship houses. I mean, one of the Klingon houses on Starbase 1.
Cornwell said there's like 40,000 lives are all gone.
I thought it was more than 40, actually. I thought it was something much larger, like 400 or something. I could be wrong.
It sounded like there's a lot of people on Starbase.
It was a ton, and there was no signs of Federation life on board. But then Cornwall is sort of like shell shocked, and she can't give an order. And Saru just orders the ship to retreat.
GDFO.
And
jump.
Yeah, and before they can get scanned, so they take off.
Saru kind of comes over to her. Is like, we're ready for your orders whenever you're good. She's like, yeah, right. Just keep going. That's good.
Right. Next scene, we get Cornwall goes to Laurel in the brig. And she basically says, hey, you know, I kind of feel like me and you, we had a connection there. Like, we get along. We were maybe one and the same in some deep down.
Your sex toys were amazing when you brought them into the torture room. They were great.
Well, I only you could go that far.
Well, I said the same thing. Back on that episode.
So she tells Laurel that the Klingons are winning the war and kicking the Federation's ass. But unfortunately, the Empire is fractured into all 24 houses, and it's not unified under one Klingon Empire. The Klingons are coming close to taking over Earth and to invading Earth. And she asks how this war ends. And Laurel says, it doesn't end. It just keeps going. And that they must conquer the Klingons or they'll never relent. So basically she says, if you don't beat us, we'll just keep on kicking your asses. We won't stop. Which is an interesting kind of take, because you're sort of like, it's funny because Cornwell's like, the Klingons are not asking for anything. They're just coming in and just slaughtering people. And he's like, what's the point of that? There's no real reason. And he's like, there's no real reason for it. They just want to take you over. They're just, they're there to dominate.
Yeah.
So
the alpha males, the alpha,
the alpha species. Yeah. Apex predator. There you go. Pulled that one out of my ass.
The Klingons and the Hirogen really need to hang out.
Yeah. I wonder how that would work.
That'd be so much fun.
It would be fun. I think Hirogen's.
I think the Hirogen are literally on the Klingon's back door.
Yeah, could be. Maybe they've been fighting for a long time.
I think they go like the Hirogen are in the upper part of the Beta Quadrant. Because if you look at it like a pizza pie, Beta Quadrant's on like the bottom left hand side,
and it's Delta a pizza quadrant, pie.
Delta Quadrant's on the top right hand side, and like I think the Hirogen space is like a big chunk of like the back end of the Beta Quadrant on the circle side.
And on the other side is the pepperoni race.
Well, because, I mean, the Hirogen Network is how they got the Doctor back on the Andy Dick episode.
I know. She makes some more pizza pie references.
Pizza pie!
Hey!
I got my hands folded up because pizza pie,
yeah. Yeah, it's a good. You put the dough and you put it in the oven.
You put need the cheese. Dough.
You need it. The dough. Next, we get Burnham visits Giorgio, and Giorgio asks Burnham what's the relationship between her and Sarek, and she's like,
"Why do you want to know?"
I don't know what you mean. It's like you look at him differently.
And, you look at him like you look at me,
or used to at least. He's like, and then she says, yeah, he's essentially my father. I was orphaned and he took me in. And she's like, oh, so you're orphaned in both worlds. How interesting.
And they bring up Lorca's fate thing again.
The way
fate struck me the same way on both universes.
Right. But then Michael asks Giorgio how she defeated the Klingon Empire. And she suggests, she kind of brought it up like the Klingons are like a cancer, and that you have to, instead of just attacking the cancer throughout, go to the source of the tumor. And she suggests going to Kronos itself. So interesting thought. So Michael brings this idea to Admiral Cornwell in the middle of the night, apparently.
You know I'm sleeping,
and
right?
I was trying to get some sleep here. Well, they just blew up half my friends in Starbase 1. I'm crying myself to sleep. No, Lorca's not. The part of the thing is I think that Cornwell felt pretty pissed off that she slept with Mirror Lorca as well.
Yeah, she was not...
Doesn't
know what kind of STDs that one's got.
Yeah, Mirror Universe STDs. That's got to even be more aggressive.
Oh, yeah. I think she got the Burnham STDs on there. And so. Burnham.
Anyways.
Mirror Burnham STDs.
So they bring this plan to the rest of the what's remaining of Starfleet. And they're basically saying, look, we are like ready to defend Earth. And we think Discovery should be there, too. And Cornwell says, we need to bring the fight to the Klingons, and we suggest that Starfleet tactics are not working. We have to do something totally else. So the plan is that they're going to jump Discovery into the subterranean caves that are beneath the crust of Kronos. But unfortunately, because they've used up all their or exhausted all their spores for the spore drive, they have to create some more. But Stamets has this little ace up his sleeve, apparently, that there was a lifeless moon, which we sort of have a Genesis reference here. They use the what they have of the spores to
his original. I think he said it was his original mycelium culture or something.
Right. They use this to basically
seed a new planet.
Thank you, seed. I don't know why I couldn't think of the word. Seed a new planet. Yes.
Or seed the moon. But you know, it's just like they said his original stock took years to grow, and then they grow like a planet's worth in like a day or like minutes.
Right. So apparently there's something in this moon that's going to be, it would be very fertile for these spores to grow. Don't know how, but we're just going to go with it. Next, we get Giorgio calls Sarek to talk about Michael Burnham and the current plans and what's necessary to win this war. And she wants to, but she wants to bring the Klingons to an end once and for all. But she asked for her freedom in return. So this gets kind of weird for me. So basically, she's kind of told Sarek, "Look, it seems like both of our Michael Burnhams have a weakness, and there's certain things they just can't take. And I'm going to tell you this secret plan to beat the Klingons, she can't take. She's not going to be able to handle it. So we're just going to have to kind of like not include her with these plans."
Yeah. So I'm wondering what that is, because it's never really divulged in the episode. I guess I'm
thinking something similar to homeworld destruction. That's what I'm thinking.
Full on Death Star.
Yeah, I mean, what they did in their 2009 JJ destruction of Vulcan, that they do it to Kronos. That's where I'm at. Like,
we got some red matter here.
Well, maybe not red matter, but if you're inside the planet's core, why can't you just destroy the planet?
And then you jump out. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Man,
that's where my brain went almost immediately. So, anyways. Interesting that she asked for freedom, so there would be an Emperor Giorgio floating around the Prime Universe or trying to get back to the Mirror Universe. Either way, it's kind of a crazy plan.
Oh, it's very crazy, and it gets crazier once we find out how that works out.
Right, so Sarek then is walking with Michael Byrne and basically says, "I gotta go back to Vulcan, take care of some involving details about this plan." And they discuss Byrne's love affair with Tyler, and he's basically saying that these emotions, you know, he says your mother has emotions, you know, it's obviously you have emotions. It's not, and don't regret loving, you know, Ash Tyler. Because, you know, it didn't turn out right.
I thought that was a strange sentiment from Sarek.
Yeah, someone who's extremely Vulcan. I mean, that's the other thing is, like, when we see them...
He's never been that nice to Spock.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. It's like, so we got his first real appearance is in TOS and not Babylon.
Journey to Babel.
Journey to Babel was, you know... He was basically as dead inside of Pure Logic. Didn't even say hi to his son or anything, you know. So
it's like, hey, could you find someone else to show me to our quarters? We don't want to go. We don't want to go with you.
My son, he's stinky. So, you know, like Mia's like, okay, so you are so logical. By the time we see you, pretty much 10 years later. Why are you like, hey man, it's okay to love people.
So much sentiment.
Yeah. It's okay to love people, man. It's all right.
It's all right.
Just get over it, man. It just didn't work out, okay?
It'll all be good.
Yeah, I don't know. It felt weird to me. So, but, you know, I guess we just got to play along.
It did feel kind of odd to me. But, yeah, okay. You know, Sarek's
way out of character for Sarek.
Sarek's way emotional. Maybe the Bendai syndrome's kicking in early. Maybe he went to remission during TOS.
Well, I mean, the biggest thing with Sarek was in the end of Star Trek IV Voyage Home, where he reconciles with Spock and says, I recall being against you joining the, you know, Starfleet. And he says, but it seems like you've made a wise choice of friends. And, you know, so you kind of felt like, you know, dad said you did all right, son, kind of moment.
Yeah.
And, but it took you what, 15 years or whatever it was, that span, you know,
well, it's probably 20. Cause I think there's a big jump in time between Star Trek I and Star Trek II.
Yeah. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just my point only being is that it was a long time before that happens.
So. Oh yeah, and then even after that, in the TNG episodes where Sarek said, like, they're still estranged, even 100 years in the future.
Yeah, well, because Spock just kept pissing him off.
hang out with Romulus, Dad.
I'm going to Romulus. Don't you hang out with those Romulans, son. I told you they're no good for you.
Can't tell me what to do anymore, Dad. I'm 83 years old.
Can't tell me what to do anymore. No, I live my own life. I'm moving out of the basement.
Dad, I'm 120 years old. I'm 120 something years old. You can't tell me what to do.
Dad, I found this red matter. I don't know what to do with it.
Just don't put it in the planet core, son. Oh, okay. Crap.
Oh, crap, Dad. I did it.
Dude, what did I tell you? It's like, dude, where's my red matter?
Dude, where's my red matter? Anyways. Oh, Jesus. All right. Off Sarek. So, but they have this moment where Sarek's like, you know, like, you know, we might not see each other again. So, you know, they give each other the live long and prosper signs and he walks off.
He's like, yeah, I'm condemning you to death probably because of the deal I made with Giorgio, FYI.
Yeah. And next we get Michael Vitzilli, who's loading up the mycelium for this project to seed the moon. And Byrne basically confides with Tilly, says, I think I just said goodbye to my father for the last time. And Tilly's like, that's a strange thing to say.
Yeah, that's weird.
But then Tilly says, you know, while you're feeling these feelings, you should probably go talk to Ash Tyler. And Michael's like, nah, I don't think I'm going to do that. Just because you're cool with him doesn't mean I'm cool with him. He did try to choke me out.
Yeah, I figured Tilly, you know, when Tilly went and sat with him, she's like, yes, I know he choked out Michael. I can move him for the kill.
Because
during, like, the Harry Mudd episode, she's like, yeah, I think my thing for Warriors is back off.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
She can move in. She can move in since Michael's moved on.
Yeah. Next we get the next scene is a pretty actually a really cool scene actually. Stamets they take the seeds of the spores and they fire them off into this moon and
I don't know how they got all that stuff from they shot like banks of like 12. So there's like 36 something, or maybe more, I didn't count them, but they looked like they were banks of at least 12 and there was like 3 of them. How did that one little thing he had like have enough stuff to seed all those things?
I don't know, but it was a cool scene to seeing all those come down.
Oh, it was awesome.
On the planet, and they land on the planet with the little helicopter thing, and then that's come down.
That's your $8 million per episode.
Yeah,
there's your budget.
Exactly. So, so then they come down and they inject the moon soil with these spores, and they do some like I think they said EM electrical, you know,
pulses
to into the ground,
stimulate the growth of the spores.
And incredibly, these spores grow incredibly fast. I don't know how that's really possible, but it's still interesting. It looked cool. So
I mean, this is why I was before the episode. This is why I was thinking like going back and time and retconning everything is less dumb than this, because they just like grow spores like magically over seconds.
Right. I got the impression, I mean, they did bring up that Stamets had worked with somebody else to try to do this, and they kind of put the kibosh on it, so they decided not to do this for some reason or another.
His partner that died on the it was his name, they said.
On the Glen, yeah.
On the Glen, yeah.
Yeah, said he didn't want to do that, so whatever. Okay.
But still, it just seems like super convenient. It's like, oh no, all our spores are gone, and then the very next episode, oh look, we've got plenty of spores. It's like, I don't know. I just felt like they needed to kill them so they could have an episode devoted to making new ones. And like, instead of furthering the plot, they made a plot device in the previous episode so they could do a plot device to fix it in this episode. You know what I mean?
Have reasons to do more reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you do this thing so you can do this other thing to get to the other thing, which you could have just not done those other two things and just gone straight to it.
They could have gone straight to the other stuff happening instead of, like, that's why I mean my filler, like I said at the beginning, like just feels like filler because they didn't have to do any of this.
I agree with that, but I mean it was at least fun looking. So
it was beautiful special effects. It was really cool to watch. I mean, I'm not down on the effects. I'm just down on the plot reasons. It was there because they had to figure out a way, because they killed them all in the last episode.
Yeah, right, exactly. Next we get Burnham visits Ash Tyler, and he apologizes her and tells her that Vok's gone.
This is the room they let Ripper out of. It's, I think, only the second time they've used this room, because I was like, where is he? And then then I recognized the little like elevator thing they had Ripper on. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Cool room. Cool window.
That's a cool window. And then Michael asks if there really is a Ash Tyler who loved her. Like, is that person real? And she says that he lied to her and said, he said, you know, you told me that if things got too much that you'd come to her, but he never did. And then he accuses her, says, hey, you're just looking at excuses to end our relationship. And she's
I laughed.
yeah.
You being a Klingon double agent, yeah, that's just looking for excuses. Sure.
If there's ever a reason to end it, that would be a reason to end it. So, and she saying that, you know, she knows he was not responsible for Vok's action, but she can only see him when he was trying to choke her out. And
changes the way you look at somebody.
I would say it would.
Yeah.
Tyler says that she was the reason that Laurel wasn't able to take full control and put Vok's personality in play. And he tells her that and she basically says, it gives him a whole rundown of when she, after the Battle of the Binary Stars, after she, I don't know if you want to call her screw up, but her basically her actions made her feel so much regret and felt sorrow. And it took her a long time to get on this road of recovery. And he says, you're going to have to do it, and it's going to be on your own, and it's not going to be easy. And she walks out. So I have to say this was really good acting, but I also have to say that this was like, if this relationship continues after this, I don't know how I'm going to feel about both of them. You know, like it just feels like they can't really, I don't know how you could reconcile that. So,
well, you could reconcile it by them going back in time and her meeting the real Ash Tyler and it'll be fine.
No,
but I understand what you mean.
Want to go to Lake Shasta?
Yeah,
I understand what you mean. Like if there's no like time travel retcon and they end up getting back together in season two, yeah, it would feel really weird if there's no retcon. Exactly. I agree.
So we get Cornwell and Sarek are communicating in the office in her ready room or office, and they agree to what they have to do. And Cornwell makes a shipwide speech, and she basically goes like, "We're going to take on this mission to Kronos, and here is long lost Captain Georgiou, and she's going to help us win the fight against the Klingons, and they're going to lead this mission." And Georgiou walks in.
She was recovered off a Klingon, you know, prison ship.
Yeah,
she wasn't ever dead, ever.
And
but Cornwell also invokes Archer and the NX-01 Enterprise.
Yes,
like exactly. It's like, oh, look, we used a cannon thing.
Yeah. Look, cannon, over here is cannon, just like the Defiant.
We're just distracting you from all the stuff that's not cannon, or trying to.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyways, and that's where we wrap up this episode. Like I said, I kind of feel like they were trying to figure out all the pieces of where everything was at the end of it and see what basically where the crew is going to land, not just physically, but emotionally as well. So we have Stamets confronting Ash Tyler. We have Michael Burton confronting Ash Tyler. We have Cornwell coming into kind of telling the crew where they are and basically the fate of the Starfleet and the Federation, you know, sits on Discovery's shoulders. So,
yeah,
which we knew. So, Dave, after seeing this episode, The War Without, The War Within, how do you feel about this episode?
So The War Without is everything happening out in space, and The War Within is them jumping inside of Kronos.
Yeah, right,
with their ship that can just jump places. I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I guess the character moments were nice, and Star Trek, you know, tends to be about character moments, but they're saying the show's like this strong arc, and I just feel like they're wasting some episodes. Like The Wolf Inside, like it just felt like they could have like gotten some of the stuff done quicker or sooner or put it in other episodes, where like it just felt like filler. This episode felt like filler to me. And like this wrapping up stuff with like, I mean, I assume that we're probably not going to see Stamets and Ash interact much next episode. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, they could have, you know, they could have had their, like, thing next season where they address how they felt with other things. It just, there's just so much to fix to end this war and do things. I just don't understand why they're wasting time on these little character moments when they're not addressing the bigger issue. If in fact next season is not going to be about the Klingon War. And that was what I was saying earlier. The preconceptions of what they're telling us don't make sense to what we're being shown.
True. Absolutely true.
So yeah. Like, if it is not the Klingon War next season, like they've been saying. Like, it's just, I don't know how they're, even if they do make a major strike at Kronos, it doesn't mean that all the Klingons are always all going to fall back. I mean, mm-hmm. some of them, especially since they're fractured, I'm like, why don't they keep this chunk of territory? If Kronos is gone, like, okay, this all this new stuff is mine now.
Right. Let me ask you.
Especially if there's nothing to go back to.
Let me ask you this. I mean, you are probably, I would call you an authority on Klingon mythology or theology. Does Kronos have a divine or theological meaning to Klingons other than just that being their homeworld?
I don't think so. I mean, like, other than all their stories from Kaelas would be from there, that would mm-hmm. be important. But I mean, if not many people give a shit about Kaelas at this point in time, I don't know why any of them would care. I mean, because it seems like only the Koopmas followers were super like big into Kaelas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like the Branch Davidians of Klingons.
Yeah, because I mean, and Worf has said the Klingons killed their gods like millennia ago, so there's no real worship, and he's just, I don't know, it just doesn't seem that they don't. I mean, I'm sure they care about Kronos as much as
anybody else would. Yeah, right. That's my home.
I mean, as much as Klingons can care about anything other than honor and killing things,
and blood wine and gawk.
Yeah, gawk. Yeah. Yeah. I was really hoping when Tyler walked up to the meal preparation thing, I was hoping he would order gah.
That would be hilarious.
Sits it down with everybody.
I never liked this before, but all of a sudden,
it's grown on me. I want to see Taylor like, oh, what is that you're eating?
Gawk.
Spaghetti.
Live worms.
I don't know, because you think like you said earlier, you think they're gonna go Death Star and totally wipe out Kronos, which would make this not JJ verse or prime timeline. This would be its own third timeline if they do indeed wipe out Kronos, like you're suspecting.
Well, like I said, I think it, like last episode we talked extensively at the end about the different paths they could take. They could either go forward in this timeline, and it's a separate timeline altogether. They could go back in time exactly the 9 months when they disappeared and maybe, rewrite history from there. Or they could go further back, binary stars, or further back and fix all this whole Klingon war together. Or they could get completely lost in space and go to another universe or something. So, I mean, there's lots of different options here. But it seems like we're moving forward in this one timeline. And they don't necessarily have to destroy Kronos, but they could hold Kronos hostage, say, we're going to destroy your planet, your homeworld, if you do not,
withdraw.
And that could be just, and how are they going to get a starship to somewhere in the center of their planet at that point?
Yeah. I didn't get a feeling that it was like super deep. I just felt like they said it was a world of caves. So they're just going to jump into a cave and just so they could do covert, drone searches over the planet.
I think there's more to it. I think they're gonna, if it's Emperor Giorgio and in charge, I think she's going to go for the death strike.
Oh, sure. I think she is too. And that's, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out for sure. But I mean, the show's, it's been really good as far as like the acting goes. The acting was stellar in this episode. They had some amazing effects with like the terraforming aspect. But I just questioned like the plot points. Like I said, like the whole like a third of the episode was like dealing with like figuring out like how we're gonna get the spores back. Oh, we've got this plan. They did this whole thing, and I'm just like, well, if you didn't kill all the spores on the ship because of reasons in the last episode,
right?
And you don't, I just feel like they're making plot points so they can make more plot points, and it doesn't necessarily feel organic. It's like, oh, look, Ace in the Hole. We got Spores Ex Machina.
That's a good point.
It's just, I don't know. I just felt annoyed that I feel like they had to do something without spores going forward. And it's like, oh, well, we got spores again. So, okay. So, yeah, they're not doing anything to make the spore drive go away. You know what I mean? It's just like, they keep leaning on this thing that's got to go away at some point if it is prime timeline. How about you? What do you think about this episode?
I think I share a lot of the same concerns. I think that if this prime, if this timeline continues, this cannot be our timeline anymore. It's just highly improbable if that much death and destruction had taken place, there would have, the scars of this war would have been echoed a lot stronger throughout the history. And why aren't we seeing, I don't know. It just seems like we would have known about it more. It just seems like it's not possible. Yeah, so, and some people are like saying like, well, they could retcon it and basically seem like it came closer. But I mean, like we said, like we would actually have Kirk probably as a cadet in this time period.
In this time period, Kirk should be on the Farragut.
Yeah. Well, I think he was a lieutenant on the Farragut. I forgot where he started off at first, but
I mean, he could be a lieutenant. It's 10 years before he becomes captain. So I mean, like, and I know that the JJ movies aren't you know prime canon, but you know Pike was saying you could probably make it the captain in 8 years.
Right.
So I mean, if he's a lieutenant now, him being captain in 10 years isn't that much of a stretch.
Right. I guess my issue more than anything is just that it just doesn't. It doesn't sync up, really. You know, it just seems like there would have been a huge psychological scar on everybody. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, having so much of everything messed up.
You know, right.
A third of the fleet gone. I mean, they said the Saratoga was gone. Like, oh, that's your ship, I know. Saratoga. I mean, they didn't mention the Enterprise or the Farragut. I'm just like, really? I mean, you're like, which? I mean, a third of your fleet. Did any of these ships get destroyed? Because that would really clue you in on, are they going to, like, mess with canon or not?
Right.
Because even still, it could be up in the air if they're going to stick with canon or not. And that's, I think that's what's troubling, is the fact that we feel like it's up in the air and not, like, certain.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah. Another thing is, again, it seems completely insane to put Emperor Giorgio acting as, you know, captain or the long lost captain of Captain Giorgio. It seems insane that they would even bring her into the mix on this. I mean, yes, I'm not saying she doesn't have any combat experience, but she just seems too volatile to bring into this highly.
The fact that she's going to have to, like, respect or at least pretend to, respect Saru and any other aliens on the ship. If she's playing the part of, you know, they, like, Sarek's like, you can't eat Saru.
Can't eat him.
You can't shoot him. Mm-hmm. You can't shoot me. You can't shoot other Vulcans. You can't shoot Andorians. You can't shoot Tellarites. You can't get mad when the Bolian does your hair. I mean,
right, exactly.
It's just like, how much briefing did she get, and how much? I mean, is she agreed to this just to be free, or how much is she going to be able to pretend to be this Giorgio?
Right.
I just don't know.
Right.
And it's not like we've got much time to find out. It's only one episode left. And then, I don't know.
Right. So that just seems insane to me. It doesn't seem like that's something that could even be managed. So that just being said, that they would put her in charge. And again, here we see, you know, it took Lorca to beat the pants off the Klingons, the Mir Lorca to beat the pants off of the Klingons. And now we're going to need the Mir Captain Giorgio to beat the pants off the Klingons again. So
why couldn't Captain Killy do it? I don't understand why she died so quick.
Maybe they caught her by, you know, surprise or something or what have you. Who knows? Maybe they were just ganged up and there was too many ships.
I'm disappointed in you, Captain Killy.
I'm so disappointed. So ethically, we're saying that these evil or, you know, diabolical characters are better to be the ones in the head of this combat than our main characters. So Saru, Michael Byrne, and, you know, Admiral Cornwell just aren't going to cut it. So let's put this animalistic Giorgio in the front lines.
Yeah, true. But I mean, I feel like going back a couple episodes, making Lorca, Mira Lorca, inherently makes his character less interesting. Because if he was just Federation and Section 31, then you've got this possibility of a redemption arc from him being dark to maybe coming to the light. And then they had him pretending to be in the light and just coming out dark.
Right.
Which was, it just, it made the character not nearly as interesting as he could have been written.
Right,
Which was disappointing to me. And I hate that. It's like, oh, we're too dumb to be savage if we have to be. Like, I don't buy that. Like, desperate times, desperate measures. Like, your ideals can only go so far, I think, especially when you're being beaten this bad. And it's sort of coming out that they are turning to this, but I just can't believe that they can't think outside the box, or Section 31 hasn't, like, oh, look, we're losing bad now. Section 31's, you know, giving, you know, we're putting, you know, officers to be, like, you know, second in command or first in command on these ships so we can get stuff done. Because at this point in time, this is when Section 31 should be, you know, like, they're basically spies and, like, secret agents, and, like, you know, they're basically to ensure the prosperity of the Federation at all costs. What is Section 31 doing?
Well, I assume Section 31 is acting like spies and agents, and they're doing what they can do, but, you know, behind the scenes or, you know, undercover. You know, it occurred to me, I could be wrong about this, but I did think about this. So we talked, I think, an episode or two, we haven't seen any resolution to the black badges on, on the Discovery.
Yeah.
You know, it was brought up in episode three. We haven't heard it. But what if the black badges don't represent Section 31, but what if they represent the Spore Drive Division? You know, because basically... You'd think
Stamets would have one of those. And we haven't seen anyone with them since. And they were definitely dressed up as security guards, because they were wearing armor even just stationed on the ship.
Right.
So, I mean, that makes me think they're wearing the body armor all time. So they're a specialist division, or maybe they're Makos. But I mean, I don't think Makos would wear black. That doesn't seem Mako. It'd be a camouflage badge.
I think it was even brought up that the Makos were disbanded by the time this came around. So,
well, that was, they said that in Beyond.
Yeah, right.
But,
well, possibly. Anyways, a quick note. I just looked up, a 5-year mission on the original series was 2,264. So 2,254 would be when this is taking place. And this is basically when Kirk was on the Farragut. So,
yeah.
So he would be, this is his first year aboard the Farragut. So I don't know. I don't know much about that time period, but I guess there was a bunch of, you know, TOS novels written about that. So
thanks for confirming.
Yeah, but that's basically where it'd be.
I mean, it might even be 55 at this point. It's 9 months from when the show started.
Well, it says here in 55, Kirk was assigned bridge duty at the weapons console. And his knee was badly injured when the Farragut was ambushed by 6 pirate ships from Epsilon Canaris 3. So there you go. Anyways, yeah, so so just the plan of putting Giorgio as captain seems crazy. I think they're going to hold the planet captive. I don't think they'll destroy Kronos. If they do destroy Kronos, fan fallout will go freaking berserk.
Yeah, so now that we're kind of talking about, like, what we think about what's going to happen in the next episode, so you're thinking that Kronos is going to be held captive
until they retreat.
You think that's Giorgio's plan?
It has to be, at least they're putting her in charge to do that, and then maybe they'll back off right at the last minute, but it has to be a way to get the Kleons out of Federation territory.
And then, you know, in the trailer for next week, we saw them do the jump into the caverns. And we saw, like, Discovery, like, floating around in the caverns. And then we also saw, like, weird, looks like maybe Orions or just strippers.
And
some scene. And I'm like, how does this come into them trying to take over Kronos? Is this a place on Kronos? Are they going, like, commando, like, checking out what's happening on Kronos? Because I just don't understand what this, because if they go some other place where Orions are, how does that even tie in to what's going forward? So this episode confused me, and then watching the preview for next week's episode confused me even more. I'm like, why is there a sex party?
Well, okay, so first my thought was, obviously Michael Burnham is dressed differently. She doesn't look like she's in her Federation uniform, so she's in some sort of undercover look.
It almost looks like what Kirk was wearing in Into Darkness.
Right. So she's into some kind of undercover look. So with that being said, I would assume that they're trying to do some recon.
Maybe the surface of Kronos, maybe?
Maybe not surface of Kronos, but maybe they have to get some information to while on their way to Kronos. So what if Ash Tyler says, oh, before you do this, you need to access these codes so they won't see you, or you can be invisible, or these are, you know, these are things you should know. So Ash Tyler, like I said, he's got all of Vok's information in his head, and he was in charge of the Ship of the Dead for, like, you know, a week, or I don't know how long, but it wasn't very long.
It was he was in charge of it for the 8 months that Michael was in prison.
Right, so he must have some.
While it was drifting, them trying to fix it.
Yeah, he must have some information on Kronos and the home world. So I'm assuming that he can use that. And it does look like there's a scene where Giorgio's attacking Laurel
in the brig. Yeah,
in the brig. I don't know what that's about, but we'll find out, of course. And I think two things that really bothers me is, one is that they're using Giorgio as the role model of how to destroy the Klingons or stop the Klingons. And secondly, this is so off the path of what canon should be. And you know me, Dave, you know me, I'm not.
You usually don't, you don't cling to canon. Usually that's my thing where I'm like, canon. You're like, I don't care as long as it's a good story. But even for you, this is starting to get off canon, which is interesting.
It's not the technology. It's not the look of the Klingons. It's just like, it's not syncing up with what the timeline is. And unless there's a good reason at the very end of this that we can go like, okay, we mopped this up and this was done within maybe a year's worth of war. But it just feels really wrong.
I mean, it's going to be almost 2 years worth of war because she was in prison for 8 months after the war started, and they've jumped 9 months into the future. So that's
right.
And then there's been an indeterminate amount of months between then. So that's pretty close to 2 years, if not already, of war. That they've skimmed by with 15 episodes and half of them or a third of them not even being about the war.
Right. And we know for a fact that Vulcan has not been taken over and Earth has not been taken over. Those are the two things we do know, because obviously Sarek's going back to Vulcan and they were asked to go to Earth to defend Earth before the Klingons took over. So I don't know. It's just again, I don't hate anything about what this show is about. I think it's a fun show. It's interesting. But if you've been a longtime Trek fan, it just does not feel like this is correct.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. And again, the writers have said season two, they'll try to they're working on resolving the quote unquote canon issues. And they said they've had a plan all along, but I'm just like, I don't know. I'm losing faith in the plan that it's going to retain any canondom after this last episode. Maybe that surprised me, but I just don't know how. I just don't know how they can do it with them doing this cockamamie plan of jumping into the middle of Kronos, going to strip clubs, and then, also throwing a Klingon around in your brig. It just seems like it's too much to do. And then resolve the war. Like, it just seems too much to do in 45 minutes. Like, the next episode's got to be I sure it won't be 2 hours, but I feel like it needs to be 2 hours for them to resolve this.
It could be over an hour, maybe. I mean, they could make it the final show of the season a little bit longer. I mean, it's possible.
Or it'll just be a giant cliffhanger for next season. I mean, I feel like that's the best case scenario, is that it's just going to be a big cliffhanger for season two.
Yeah, yeah. And you said they're poised to start filming again very soon, right?
Yeah, I saw something. I mean, it wasn't official, but like they were thinking that April would be a good time to start shooting with people's schedules and stuff like that. So it's looking like they're hopefully going to start shooting in April, and with a 9 or so month turnaround, that would bring us to January for them putting out January of 2019 for
out
the first episode. So it will be basically a year before we get Discovery again, most likely.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I guess it's good to know that this stuff is, being written and they're getting it ready to be shot. And April's not too far away.
No, it's very soon. And obviously, besides the you know, the post-production crews and everyone putting all the effects and everything together. The actors in the film crew have probably been all off for this last couple months. So,
well, I think they said they were filming the last episode on the first after track.
Okay. Right. Well, I mean, so that's a good long time. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, it's understandable. They have a lot of post-production work, so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the show's gorgeous. And, you know, the show's fun. Like, I mean, as down as we sound on it sometimes, the show is fun. It's a good show. I'm enjoying the show. It's easily the most solid first season of Star Trek we've ever gotten. But it's also oddly disjointed. Because they pitched this as the Klingon War season. And then the first two episodes is the breakout of the Klingon War. Then we've got three episodes talking about the Spore Drive. Then we've got, you know, an episode about Harry Mudd, an episode about Sarek. And then we've got an episode about the weird crystal planet and Saru and him going crazy. And then we get a Klingon War episode. And then we get four episodes in the Mirror Universe. And that's when, to me, the Mirror Universe episodes clicked. That's what the story was about. It's always been about Lorca trying to get back home.
Right.
So that's what the first 13 episodes were about. So if you look at it from an overall plot point, the Klingon War starts, that's kind of like prologue-y. But from episode 3 to 13, it's all about Lorca getting back home. That was the plot all along. It wasn't about the Klingon, it wasn't about the Klingon War. The main plot was about Lorca.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Until he died. And then okay, well, the Klingon War's still happening, so we're going to finish up the Klingon War. But it's just like, the Klingon War was just like backdrop.
Yeah, you know, like this episode, I really did enjoy this episode for a lot of reasons. I like that they're like kind of like
character stuff.
A lot of good character development, and we're kind of seeing where things are going. Here's the other thing is I get frustrated because, you know, Michael Burnham's character is supposed to be the front and central character, the main character, and I always feel like she's the most shortchanged out of everybody. She has a big role in it, but I see like it seems like we get more, you know, characters, you know, more story for everyone else. Do you feel the same way? Like, I felt this was even like Michael Light on this episode. Like, obviously he has that great, like interaction with Ash Tyler almost at the very end. And, you know, she has like a couple interactions with Giorgio, but besides that, not much.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind. Cause I mean, she's not the most interesting character on the show. I mean, she's far from it, unfortunately. And it's not because she's a bad actress. Sequoia Green, she's been doing fantastic. It's just, her character just hasn't been compelling to me at all, really.
Lorca
was by far the most compelling character to me until they ruined him by making Mirror Universe.
I just want to see her get out of her own way. I feel like, you know, she's like always conflicted and she's always like, you know, okay, you. Even the Battle of Binary Stars, it's not really like that. You couldn't blame all on her. I mean, she made a few mistakes and she tried to make it right the best she could with what she had. And I don't know. I never blamed her for that as much. You know, shit happened, you know, shit happens to people and you can't. And I've never blamed her for that. I mean, I understand why other people would blame her for it, but.
And she blamed herself for it. So once you admit it, that's your fault, you're kind of fucked as far as, you know, your superiors go.
Right,
and in a court martial, if you admit it, if you just like, it's all my fault, it's like, you're pretty much screwed.
Yeah. I don't know. So there's a lot of, like I said, I enjoyed this episode. I enjoy where I'm excited to see how this ends up with over at Kronos. I know it's going to be action-packed and super fun to watch. But the other side of it, I'm like, where is this all going and how could this possibly tie into 10 years later into TOS? I mean, I know 10 years is a long time, but it's not that long.
And if, like, you know, if they do like 7 seasons and every, you know, season takes place in over a year or you know, almost 2 years at this point, you know, if they make seasons take these long spans of time, I mean, we will catch up to TOS
very quickly.
Pretty soon, yeah. Right, every season spans 2 years.
Yeah.
Or more. So, you know, we might even go past it, depending on how long Discovery gets renewed for. And that's interesting, an interesting thing. I wonder how CBS is going to feel once everyone cancels their All Access when Star Trek is over.
I think they'll feel the sting and they'll know that, you know, All Access is only, you know, being held up by Discovery. That's for sure. I mean, obviously they can probably keep it going, but I don't know. Yeah, All Access is a tough one for me. I'm not a fan of it just because I think it's turned off a lot of fans. I think you'd have more fans if you release this all out to, you know, Netflix kind of thing. You know, I think people, you'd get more love from people.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, there was just a post earlier this evening on our Facebook group where people were like, is anyone else going to cancel after next week's episode? Like, yeah, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely am. And it's just, I don't begrudge them in a lot of ways, but I think a lot of people are like, you know, people, their monthly and their, you know, expenses is down to what they can afford. And if they can afford Netflix, it's a luxury, but they enjoy it and they get a lot of content from it. But, you know, if you have to add, the only
thing I'm watching on All Access is Star Trek.
Yeah. I mean, if you're adding, you know, whatever is the $5.99 or whatever it is with the commercials, that's $5.99 a month. I mean, it's not a huge, but it's still enough. It's like, that's, I'm paying that a month to see the show.
Just one show.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to figure out.
It's interesting. I just don't know how much that's going to hurt the future of Discovery if they see this huge outflux of people, which is probably going to happen. So, I mean, I'm glad they've already been greenlit for season two, mm-hmm. But I'm scared with the future. I mean, hopefully they'll get, you know, all the numbers back and more for season two. And, you know, maybe they get an influx of new people who just, you know, sign up for a month or just to binge watch it and then cancel. You know what I mean? Because some people haven't been paying all along because they just want to be able to binge it and then cancel it immediately. So
right.
It'll be interesting. You know, yeah. I'm just glad season two is greenlit, so at least we have that to look forward to.
Right. I don't know.
The War Within. It's not a whole lot more to say about it. Just we got to see how it wraps up next week, and I don't know how they're going to do it in an hour. I can't see it.
I can't see it either, and I can't see how this ties into future Trek. I maybe I'm wrong. But maybe there's a logical conclusion to all this, but I'm not seeing it at the moment.
It's strip clubs, man. It's strip clubs. It's got to be. That's what's going to tie it all together.
That could be it. Yeah, right.
I don't know whatever that was in the preview for next week. I'm just like, sure.
It's Orion's. It has to be Orion's. You're going to run into Orion's. It's going to be fun to see Orion's again.
I'd love to see Orion's. It's just I'm just so like I just don't know how. It just seems like a distraction from what they're going to need to do for the episode. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I expect they've got the stuff harvested. They've got to jump into Kronos immediately. And if they don't do it to the end, if they don't do it to the end of the episode, I'm going to be really confused.
Yeah. Sure. For sure.
I'm just like, because it seems like that's going to be the first thing they do. Because I was hoping they jump in at the end of this episode and then it'd be a cliffhanger. Something goes wrong and they got to fix it. But they didn't even get that far this time. So I'm like, oh. That jump in the Kronos has got to be in the first act at least. If it's in the second or third act, I'm going to be super like, what are you doing?
Or what if they send Michael Byrne off on a fool's errand to get her off the ship so she doesn't get high and mighty on the mission?
That's true. And then it would follow her because she's the main character, even though so we don't even see much of the mission. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Well, it's going to, I mean, without a doubt, next episode's going to be fun and exciting and special effects filled and awesome. So, there's that to look forward to for sure.
Yeah.
And as far as the story goes, I'm just like, I'm pulling my hair because the last couple episodes I've been like, what are they doing? They keep raising the stakes and it's just going to be like, I don't know how they're going to resolve it in just one more episode.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you reconcile everything?
Well, we'll have to wait and see next week. I'm excited to find out.
Final episode of season one. It has been an exciting trip, and they have delivered the goods on a lot of things. So I don't regret anything.
I just have lots of questions. Yeah, I think that's you too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Well, our intro is provided by Dave Wilkes, and all our rest of the music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. The show you can find at syntholics.com. You can email us at syntholics@yahoo.com. And you can join the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/syntholics. And if you like cocktail tutorials and want to listen to the podcast and see our video reviews for Discovery, you can check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/syntholics.
Absolutely, and please go down to Apple iTunes, rate and review us, 5 stars preferably. Give us a nice review. Helps people see the show more. With more reviews and ratings we get. Also, if you have a little money you can throw into our kitty, we have Patreon /Syntholics. It helps keep the lights on and keeps the big wheels of podcasting and YouTube producing coming your way. Keeps them turning. turning and turning and bubbling and boiling. So yeah, definitely if you have a dollar or if you can throw more our way, we definitely appreciate it. It's a buck a month. It's not much to ask for. And yeah. And if you have a friend, a family member, a coworker that likes podcasts, that likes Star Trek, that's interested in drinks, point them our way. Point them to the YouTube channel. Point them to our podcast. Let them know that we exist. A word of mouth is a wonderful way to support the show.
Absolutely. And if you like tweeting, you can find the show at Synthaholic Duo. I am personally at David_J_Duncan, and Aaron is at Blackbird2004.
That's right. Tweet us. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, we'd love to have Star Trek discussions on the old Twitters.
Is Discovery breaking complete canon? Is there going to be an answer for it? Or do you think canon is, you know, negligible and we don't care?
Are we in a third timeline completely? What do you guys think? Let us know. Tweet us or message us on Facebook or join the Facebook group and join the discussion there.
Facebook group is a lot of fun. A lot of fun people there talking to us and talking about the show. And it's everyone's got some interesting ideas for sure.
Yeah, it's always a lot of fun. When I'm not being blocked by Facebook.
Yeah, poor Dave.
Yeah, I got blocked again this week for sharing our video review from our Facebook page to our Facebook group. So go figure that they don't realize that I'm in control of both of these things.
There's somebody in Facebook that's just out to gunning out for Dave.
Just hates me. Mm-hmm. Or the algorithm has just got me flagged for whatever reason.
Too many dick jokes.
Yeah, well, that one group banned me, so I'm on like the bad list.
Apparently. Crazy.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Thanks for joining me, Aaron. It's always a lot of fun.
Yes, sir. It has been fun discovering.
Fun discovering discovery.
Yes.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. In the sink and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll bullshit our pants. You're the best drinking friend.